A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System, verses 1 to 30, and maybe more, and we will finish the chapter today. So verses 1 and 2. Shri Uddhava Vacha Yastraya Bihita Purvam Paramastra Bhakti Lakshana Varnashrama Chavavatam Savesham Dipadam Api Vitarnastiya Manana Tripaktir Nidambhavit Satarme Narvindaksha Tamama Kya Tumarvasi. Shri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, previously you described the principles of devotional service that are to be practiced by followers of the Varnashram system and even ordinary unregulated human beings. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of their prescribed duties." So what do you remember from chapter 14, which was a lot about devotional service? That chapter emphasized devotional service. Does anybody? That was 2 days ago. It wasn't yesterday, so it's ancient history already. Yes, Kapit? With the dust of the feet of my pure devotee, I desire to purify my material world. Boy, there's a verse that's going to come like that in another chapter. Okay, yes? Yes. Verse number 16. Wow. Oh. Yeah. Nobody is dear to me as you are, Uddhava. Okay. And I think I have something here on 16 also. We are in chapter 14. Oh, is that chapter 16?
Yeah.
Chapter 14. Okay, good. Well, let me look at that. Chapter 16, verse 16. Okay. Let me look at the verse and see if that is what it says here. Yes. "With the dust of my devotee's lotus feet, I desire to purify the material worlds which are situated within me, thus I always follow the footsteps of my pure devotees, who are free from all personal desire, wrapped in thought of my pastimes, peaceful, without any feelings of enmity, and of equal disposition everywhere." Okay. And I had something from this Satyaraj Prabhu on that verse. Verse 16. Oh, yeah. "This verse hints at the appearance of Lord Chaitanya, who came as a devotee to taste the love and devotion the devotees feel for him. Consequently, he follows in his devotees' footsteps." That was his comment, I thought. And that also is stated in Brihadbhagavatamrita. They also noticed, they said, yes, this is, they quoted this verse and said this shows the appearance, predicts the appearance of Lord Chaitanya as well. He takes the dust of his devotees' feet. In the incarnation of Lord Chaitanya. At one point in his life, he was serving, doing menial service for his devotees and everything. Okay, anything else from chapter 14, which is about devotional service? Okay, by fixing the mind on Krishna, one attains the highest happiness. Okay, yes?
And one who fixes the mind on Krishna, wherever he goes, every direction is filled with happiness.
Oh, if you fix your mind on Krishna, wherever you go, all directions are filled with happiness. So I would like to read verse 9 of that. It has an interesting comment by Satyaraj. The verse 9 states, "O best among men, the intelligence of human beings is bewildered by my illusory potency. Thus, according to their own activities and whims, they speak in innumerable ways about what is actually good for people." So then the next verse says, some say people will be happy by performing pious religious activities. Some say through fame, sense, and then there's a whole list here of how you can be happy. So then Satyaraj quotes from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, five kinds of pseudo-religion. Come in. Okay, Hare Krishna. So the first one, he says, Nastikyavad, or atheism. Then there's Sandehavad, skepticism. Then there's, yes, five categories. Jadavad, seeing matter is all that is. Jadavad. Or Anatmavad, doctrine of no soul. And Nirvisheshavad, God exists but has no form. So these are the different... he quotes Chaitanya Shikshamrita, five kinds of pseudo-religion. So I thought that was interesting that people speak different things, but he classifies five different: atheism, skepticism, seeing matter as supreme, no soul, God exists but has no form. Okay, so then what else in 14? 15. Mystic yoga. Do we have anybody here has attained perfection since yesterday? Everybody try? Try what was there? What was suggested in the verses? Yes? Okay. The unifying principle of all the mystic powers is Krishna. You have to meditate on Krishna if you want to get anything. Okay. What else do you remember?
To get perfection.
Okay.
Some kind of perfection.
And in one of the purports on the Mahima city, it was saying, I thought there was a really nice point here, that the devotees get Sang city, which means they chant Hare Krishna and they go to the spiritual world. So that's a better city than the yogi, Sang city, complete city. Hare Purush, you had something?
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that we should develop sankalpa to go to Krishna by reading Govinda Lilamrita, Krishna Bhavanamrita, and Sankalpa Kapaduma.
Acha. Okay, we should read these books to get sankalpa to go to Krishna. Anything else? Sankalpa Kalpadruma. Okay. Yes, Abhay? Two kinds of mystic opulence. One is material, one is spiritual. Okay. Okay, what else? Yes? Mode of goodness. From the mode of goodness, the ten. And five just extra, five inferior, and to know past, present, and future. I was remembering the ten. One of the ten, I think, the ten secondary ones is to hear things far away.
Yeah.
So if you read Radhana Swami's book, he got that mystic power before he became a devotee. If you read, he was meditating at the Ganga, and he heard the Hare Krishna mantra from the Ganga. So I thought that was a quite interesting example of hearing from far away. Somehow he heard a chorus singing the Hare Krishna mantra from the Ganga. He was in the middle of the Ganga on a rock meditating, and he heard that. So that's an example of that mystic power of hearing things far away. Yes? Better to wander in Vrindavan than to try for mystic powers. And you get it, whatever Krishna wants you to have, he'll give you. And also it's the conclusion of the chapter was that it's an impediment, actually. It's an impediment for one who has bhakti. And you can get it. If you have bhakti, then you can get everything, and it's the only way. So I would... Let's see. Yeah, okay. So we'll go to chapter 16. What do you remember from chapter 16? Gold and rubies. Huh. What? He's
among metals, he's gold.
Among metals, he's gold. And among jewels, he's rubies.
Oh. Because it reminds Kaustubha gem.
I would think he would be sapphire, because that's his color. But I guess he prefers to remember his devotees than himself. The rubies, okay? The Kaustubha is like rubies. What else do you remember from chapter 16? Opulences of Krishna. Yes, Kabir.
Transcendentalist.
She completely controls his words and minds by superior intelligence. Okay? Yes?
Brahma Gayatri helps us to develop loving intelligence of seeing Krishna everywhere.
Brahma Gayatri helps us to develop loving intelligence of seeing Krishna everywhere. Going to Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Good. Okay, so we should concentrate when we chant our Gayatri Mantra. And we will be able to see Krishna everywhere and give us loving intelligence. I have one comment from Satyaraj on verse 41, which is, what does it say? Oh, verse 41. And he kind of categorizes two categories of qualities of Krishna. Verse 41. I have briefly described to you all my spiritual opulences and also the extraordinary material features of my creation, which are perceived by the mind and defined in different ways according to circumstances. So he says that there's two categories, the Lord's spiritual forms, their incarnations and manifestation, and then the second category is the best aspect of material creation, like rubies, like gold, like that. So then he said a very interesting comment here, which I'd like to share. The spiritual forms come to living beings through revelation, scripture, and the mercy of saintly people. But the material dimensions are dependent upon each individual's mind. If one learns how to perceive creation, then one can see Krishna's presence and benefit from it. Otherwise, one remains spiritually blind. Okay. So today we're going to hear about Varnashram, which was previously also described in brief. And now we're going to hear a very elaborate description of the... Today will be Brahmacharis and Grihastas discussion. And tomorrow will be Vanaprastha and Sannyas. So most of us fall in the first category, but there will be some in the second category tomorrow. Vanaprastas, no sannyasis here yet, but there are actually aspiring sannyasis in the room. So tomorrow will be also very relevant. So here are the first and second verse. My dear Lord, previously you described the principles of devotional service that are to be practiced by followers of the Varnashram system and even ordinary unregulated human beings. Remember, there are some qualities, or maybe it's in here, that everybody should follow. My dear lotus-eyed Lord, now please explain to me how all human beings can achieve loving service unto you by the execution of their prescribed duties. So in the purport, Lord Krishna has already elaborately explained the process of Jnana Yoga. That was Hamsa Avatar that we discussed in chapter 13, Bhakti Yoga, that was chapter 14 and 12, and Ashtanga Yoga, chapter 15. So now, Uddhava inquires how those inclined toward Karma Yoga can achieve the perfection of life, Krishna consciousness. Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes he is personally the creator of the Varnashram system. So if you have any complaints, go to Krishna. Chaturvarnyamayashistam guna karma vibhagashaha. Therefore, the ultimate goal of the Varnashram system is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, one should become a devotee of the Lord and learn the process of devotional service. So this is describing Daivi Varnashram, or the Varnashram which is meant for the pleasure of Krishna. There is categories of Varnashram, and they have different goals, they have different... the people have the highest in each of the different varnashrams. There are different highest types of people, and so there's Daivi Varnashram, which we will be hearing here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's Asarik Varnashram, and that is based on birth. And we see that some people in India are following that type of Varnashram. They believe that you must be born as a Brahmin or whatever in order to actually understand who you are, and marriages are very much according to your caste. They're very still in India. They follow their caste system. And then there is natural Varnashram, which we find all over the world. That there are people who are naturally intellectuals, and who are spiritually inclined. There are people who are managers and soldiers. And there are those who are businessmen and farmers, and there are those who just serve the others who get a job. Of course, nowadays everybody has to get a job, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But when I was living in Calcutta, there were these very rich men, Marwaris, still there, and their sons would not go to school; they would just learn the business from the father. And then, if they need somebody to manage, they would just hire a manager. They would just pay somebody to manage the business, because their sons would just be pure Vaishyas, And they didn't have to go and learn management. The father would teach them everything they need to know. And then if they need somebody, they just hire somebody to be a manager who went to college. And so that's how it used to be. And Prabhupada even tells a story that one of them couldn't even sign his name. He was so illiterate. He had tons and tons of money. He couldn't even know how to sign his name. He had to learn to sign his name so he could sign checks. But that's about it as far as his learning was. Yeah. Yeah, they wouldn't bother. They wouldn't bother. They would just teach them the trade. Yeah. And so it's... Mostly the Kshatriyas, you hear about Kshatriyas and Brahmanas going to the, like Krishna and Balaram when they became... They didn't go when they were Vaishyas. They didn't go to school in Vrindavan. But when they went to Mathura, then they were known as Kshatriyas. So then they were sent. First thing, they went to Gurukul. So you can see from the lives of Krishna and Balaram. Of course, they don't belong to any Varna ashram, but they were following, actually, just the culture at the time. So they were sent off. And then when they were in Vrindavan, they just played with the cows the whole day. They didn't go to Gurukul or anything. They just took care of the cows till he was 11. And then they went to Tara and then off to the Gurukul, first thing. So, yes. So here it says that a Krishna conscious person is not required to execute all the formalities of the Varnashram system, because a Krishna conscious person absorbed in love of Godhead automatically gives up all sense gratification and mental speculation. So this is a very important point, that somebody who's Krishna conscious, he is actually achieving the purpose of the Varnashram system. So therefore, he does not need to follow all the details of the Varnashram system, because the goal of the Varnashram is to please Krishna. So if somebody's already giving his life to please Krishna, then it's not necessary. But still at the same time, he does follow the rules, just so he's not ostracized. He tries to follow. And if you don't follow, here it says you are a dvipada pashu, or a two-legged animal. So now Vishwanath Chakravarti says, Dharma of Bhakti has three types, pure Bhakti, mixed Bhakti, and secondary Bhakti. Pure Bhakti arises in humans with or without Varnashram by association with pure devotees, by good fortune. It does not arise from Varnashram or other processes. Mixed Bhakti and secondary Bhakti arise from one's Dharma and from association with persons with mixed Bhakti or secondary Bhakti. How mixed and secondary bhakti arises, you alone know, he says to Krishna. Bhakti in verse 2 refers to mixed and secondary bhakti. Okay. So we'll go to verses 3 and 4. My dear Lord, O mighty armed one, previously in your form of Lord Hamsa, you spoke to Lord Brahma those religious principles that bring supreme happiness to the practitioner. My dear Madhava, now much time has passed, and that which you previously instructed will soon practically cease to exist, O subduer of the enemy. My dear Lord Achyuta, there is no speaker, creator, and protector of supreme religious principles other than your lordship, either on the earth or even in the assembly of Lord Brahma, where the personified Vedas reside. Thus, my dear Lord Madhusudana, when you, who are the very creator, protector, and speaker of spiritual knowledge, abandon the earth, who will again speak this lost knowledge? Therefore, my Lord, since you are the knower of all religious principles, please describe to me the human beings who may execute the path of loving service to you and how such service is to be rendered. So it sounds like this is going to be another chapter in devotional service, because in Uddhava Gita, he's bringing everyone to bhakti, bringing everyone to devotional service. Verse 8, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Sri Uddhava, the best of devotees, thus inquired from the Lord. Hearing his question, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, was pleased, and for the welfare of all conditioned souls, spoke those religious principles that are eternal. Verse 9, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Uddhava, your question is faithful to religious principles, and thus gives rise to the highest perfection in life, pure devotional service. For both ordinary human beings and the followers of the Varnashram system, now please learn from me those supreme religious principles. So we're going to hear now about dharma. Purport. The word Naishaya Sayakara indicates that which awards the highest perfection of life, Krishna consciousness, which the Lord is explaining to Sri Uddhava. When considering religious principles, ordinary human beings remain bogged down in sectarian, mundane considerations. What is an example of a sectarian, mundane consideration? Yeah.
It's the religion of my birth.
This is the religion of my birth. So how can I change? Yes. Mundane, sectarian. If any of us were in this room were thinking like that, then we wouldn't be here today. If we were thinking, oh, I'm a Christian, I cannot change. No, but we saw the principle of it. I saw, love the Lord. That's the highest principle of the Christian religion. So this is what we are learning in Krishna consciousness. The Varnashram system is the most scientific presentation of religiosity on the earth. Those who are most perfect in that system come to the point of Krishna consciousness or dedicating everything for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. So the Varnashram system is helpful because it allows people to remain in their position and make advancement, become perfect in their work, karma yoga. And not everybody is ready to leave their work, leave everything and become a devotee. So therefore, this is important here. 10. In the beginning, in Satya Yuga, there is only one social class called Hamsa, to which all human beings belong. In that age, all people are unalloyed devotees of the Lord from birth. Thus, learned scholars call this first age Krita Yuga, or the age in which all religious duties are perfectly fulfilled. So, how many of you would like to be born in Satya Yuga? Kali Yuga is better, right? other people in Satya Yuga, remember what we heard in a previous chapter, they all want to be born in Kali Yuga. Even though it's so easy, in one sense, in Satya Yuga it's easier, but in another, in many senses, it's not easier. It's easier in Kali Yuga. So here in the purport, it is understood from this verse, the supreme religious principle is unalloyed surrender to the supreme personality of Godhead. So this is the highest principle, and that was prevalent in Satya Yuga. In Satya Yuga, there's no influence of the lower modes of nature, and therefore all human beings belong to the highest social order called Hamsa, in which one comes under the direct supervision of the personality of Godhead. In the modern age, people are crying out for social equality, but unless all human beings are situated in the mode of goodness, which is the position of purity and unalloyed devotion, social equality is not possible. Yes, we want to be equal, but if we're in different modes, then it makes it very difficult. It's hard for a person in the mode of goodness to associate with a person in the mode of ignorance. You can't just live together because you can't tolerate how the person in the mode of ignorance is living. Unregulated, dirty, gets up any time, sleeps any time, eats any time. And a person in the mode of goodness, he's just regulated. It has to be on time, like Srila Prabhupada. He had his whole schedule from morning till night, and it was the same no matter where he was. He would just land somewhere, and then he would take up at that time wherever he landed. So he was acting in the mode of goodness. As the lower modes of nature become prominent, secondary religious principles arise by which people may be gradually elevated to the pure stage of unalloyed surrender to God. In Satya Yuga, there are no inferior human beings, and thus there is no need of secondary religious principles. So just surrender. Everybody just surrenders to Krishna in Satya Yuga. Everyone directly takes to the unalloyed service of the Lord, fulfilling perfectly all religious obligations. In Sanskrit, one who perfectly executes all duties is called Krita Kritya, is mentioned in this verse. Therefore, Satya Yuga is called Krita Yuga, or the age of perfect religious action, coined Srila Jiva Goswami, whose disappearance is today. Yes. The word Ado, in the beginning, refers to the moment of universal creation. Ado. In other words, the Varnashram system is not a recent concoction, but naturally arises at the time of creation and should therefore be accepted by all intelligent human beings. So it's not something new. It's there from the beginning, with the birth of Lord Brahma, beginning of creation. Didn't say the beginning of Satyuga. So let us see. We're in chapter, verse 10. Sri Bhakti Siddhanta says, the period of time when human beings were not polluted by the three modes of material nature is called Krita Yuga or Satya Yuga. Ekayana Padati refers to the period of time when the Varnas were not divided. That undivided Varna was known as Hamsa. The Supersoul is referred to as Hamsa, and devotees are those who are maintained by the Hamsa. So in Satya Yuga it was everybody was Hamsa, and the Super Soul was Hamsa, and they were worshipping and meditating on Hamsa. That is one of the names of the incarnation for Satyuga. 11. In Satyuga, the undivided Veda is expressed by the syllable Om, and I am the only object of mental activities. I become manifest as the four-legged bull of religion. Thus the inhabitants of Satyuga, fixed in austerity and free from all sins, worship me as Lord Hamsa. So they were chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, like in Bhagavatam class we have Dhruva Maharaj. He was following the process of Satyuga, chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Someone asked me today, why didn't he chant Hare Krishna? Narada Muni knew about that. Why didn't he just give him the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? So because it was not the Yuga Dharma. The Yuga Dharma was something different. And we read that they don't believe simply by moving your lips you can get perfection. You have to do all these austerities along. I mean, he could have just chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, but instead he stood on his leg, one leg, and he started eating grass, and then he was stopped eating, and then he stopped breathing, and because he thought this is what is necessary to achieve perfection. In Satyuga, everybody thought this is what we have to do. We have to do this along with our chanting. So this is why we're very fortunate in this age. Very fortunate. So the bull of religion, purport, tapa shocham dayasatyam iti para kite kita. In the age of satya, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. So we're going to hear now about brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So who can tell me which, now raise your hand, which ones follow austerity? Which of the four? Yes? Vanaprastha. Which ones are supposed to uphold the leg of cleanliness?
Brahmachari.
Now raise your hand. Which one should uphold the leg of mercy? Yes? Grihastas. Yeah, they have to give in charity. Grihastas must give in charity. Okay, and truthfulness, sannyasis. This was from third canto at the beginning of creation, how the four ashrams were established to uphold the four legs of the bull of religion. So brahmacharis is cleanliness and also education. So they're students. They have two different qualities from two different. In third canto, they had education or purity, education, and the grihastas have to uphold the leg of mercy, to give charity to all classes of beings, especially the brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And austerity is for the vanaprasthas, and truthfulness is for the sannyasis. Sri Vyasadeva divided the one Veda into four, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas at the end of Dwapara Yuga. But in Satya Yuga, the whole of Vedic knowledge is easily understood by everyone simply by vibrating the syllable Om. Isn't that shortcut? If you want to know the whole Vedas in one word, it's Om. Okay? In this age, there are no ritualistic or pious activities such as sacrifice, since everyone is sinless, austere, and fully engaged in worshipping personality of Godhead, Lord Hamsa, through the process of meditation. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati comments. An interesting comment. The four legs of the bull represent the four parts of the Lord's opulence as manifested in this world. The condensed form of the Lord's holy name in the form of Om is the origin of the Vedas. So four parts of the Lord's opulence are these four legs of religion. Okay, verse 12. O greatly fortunate one, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, Vedic knowledge appeared from my heart, which is the abode of the air of life, in three divisions, as Rig, Sama, and Yajur. Then, from that knowledge, I appeared as threefold sacrifice. In Treta Yuga purport, the bull of religion loses one leg, and only 75% of religious principles are manifested, represented by the three principal Vedas. So which leg does he lose?
Austerity.
Austerity? Okay, so we've got austerity. We've still got truthfulness, mercy, and cleanliness. Okay? Or education. Austerity is gone. The Lord appears in the process of threefold Vedic sacrifice. The three divisions are understood as follows. The Hota priest offers oblations into the fire and chants the Rig Veda. The Udgata priest chants the Sama Veda. And the Adharyu priest, who arranges the sacrificial ground, altar, etc., chants the Yajur Veda. In Treta Yuga, such sacrifice is the authorized process for spiritual perfection, where pranat in this verse refers to the universal form of the personality of Godhead. This form is further described in the following verses. 13. In Treta Yuga, the four social orders were manifested from the universal form of the personality of Godhead. The Brahmanas appear from the Lord's face, Kshatriyas from the Lord's arms, Vaishyas from the Lord's thighs, and Shudras from the legs of that mighty form. Each social division was recognized by its particular duties and behavior. So Srila Prabhupada, when he went to Moscow, he quoted this verse to Professor Kotovsky, and he explained it. Whether you take this state or that state, unless there's a smooth, systematic establishment of these four orders of life, the state or society will not run very smoothly. So what does Professor Kotovsky say? Generally, it seems to me, this whole Varnashram system to some extent created a natural division of labor in the ancient society. But now, division of labor among people in any society is much more complicated and sophisticated. So it is very confusing to group them into four classes. Then Srila Prabhupada replies, confusion has come to exist because in India at a later day, the son of a Brahmin, without having Brahminical qualifications, claimed to be a Brahmin. Who was that son of a Brahmin? Sringi. So he says, this is a doubt. Prabhupada said, this was the downfall of the Varnashram. It was Sringi. Others, out of superstition or a traditional way, accepted him as a Brahmin. Therefore, the Indian social order was disrupted. But in our Krishna consciousness movement, we are chaining Brahmanas everywhere because the world needs the brain of a Brahmana. Although Maharaj Pariksit was a monarch, he had a body of Brahmanas and learned sages to consult, an advisory body. It is not that the monarchs were independent. In history, it is found if some of the monarchs were not in order, they were dethroned by the Brahminical advisory council. Although the Brahmanas did not take part in politics, they would advise the monarch how to execute the royal function. This is not too far in the past. How long ago was Ashok? So Professor Kotovsky says that would be equal to what we call, in our terminology, ancient and medieval India. And Prabhupada said, yes, and Professor Kotovsky. In old and feudal India, you are right, it was very open, and the major part of the high administrative staff in the legislative department were Brahmins. Even in the Mughal era, there were Brahmins to advise the Muslim emperors and administrators. The Prabhupada said, that is a fact. The Brahmanas were accepted. They formed the advisory committee of the king. For example, Chandragupta, the Hindu king, was in the age of Alexander the Great. Just before Chandragupta, Alexander the Great went from Greece into India and conquered a portion. When Chandragupta became emperor, he had Chanaka as his prime minister. Perhaps you have heard this name, Chanaka. So Prabhupada was talking about the Varnashram to Professor Kotovsky. And I think he concluded that, you know, you want communism. Yes, we are accepting also communism, spiritual communism, that everybody is equal in the spiritual platform. So verse 14, The married order of life appears from the loins of my universal form, and the celibate students come from my heart. The forest-dwelling retired order of life appear from my chest, and the renounced order of life was situated within the head of my universal form. We go to verse 15. The various occupational and social divisions of human society appeared according to inferior and superior natures manifest in the situation of the individual's birth. So it's according to nature. Purport, according to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the brahmanas and sannyasis being situated on the head of the universal form of the Lord are considered to be the most qualified, whereas the shudras and grihasthas being on the legs or loins of the personality of Godhead are considered to be in the lowest position. A living entity is born with a certain amount of intelligence, beauty, and social opportunity, and he is therefore situated in a particular occupational and social position within the Varnashram system. Ultimately, such positions are external designations. But since the majority of human beings are conditioned by the external energy of the Lord, they should act according to the scientific Varnashram divisions until they reach the stage of Jivan Mukta, or liberated life. So until you're Jivan Mukta, yet you should have some ashram or varna or something. Of course, if you're completely surrendered your life to Krishna, then that's another thing. You follow whatever your guru tells you to do. Then you're under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna. So verse 16, we'll hear about the brahmanas. Peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, satisfaction, tolerance, simple straightforwardness, devotion to me, mercy, and truthfulness are the natural qualities of the brahmanas. So let's see what Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says about verse 16. What's the same thing? Yes. No, 16, sorry. Oh, yeah. Purport. One cannot find much lust or anger in the nature of a brahmana. For this reason, a brahmana does not indulge in unrestricted sense gratification, but instead takes pleasure in discussing devotional literature. So the brahmana, he's telling us, there's not so much lust or anger in the nature of a brahman. He's peaceful. He's not disturbed. Purity, steadiness due to an absence of dissatisfaction, tolerance, simplicity, inclination toward the Lord's service, compassion for all living entities, and truthfulness. These eight characteristics are to be found in brahmanas. So he's telling us a few more characteristics of brahmanas. Verse 17, kshatriyas. Dynamic power, bodily strength, determination, heroism, tolerance, generosity, great endeavor, steadiness, devotion to the brahmanas, and leadership are the natural qualities of the kshatriyas. Yes. So if we think about all the heads of the governments today, do we see anybody who is like this? Bodily strength? No, they don't have to have that qualification because they don't themselves fight. They just send out the poor people to fight the wars. They don't lead the battle. Generosity? No. And so they don't have these qualities. Devotion to the brahmanas, forget it. And leadership, maybe. Great endeavor. So verse 18, now here are the qualities of the Vaishyas. Faith in Vedic civilization, dedication to charity, freedom from hypocrisy, service to the brahmanas, and perpetually desiring to accumulate more money are the natural qualities of the Vaishyas. So if you have a desire to make money, you're in this category here. Purport. Atushtir Arto Pachaya indicates the Vaishya is never satisfied with any amount of wealth and always wants to accumulate more. On the other hand, he's Dananishta, or dedicated to charitable work. So that we see a lot of people who have the first quality but not the second so much. Brahma Sevi, always engaged in assisting the brahmanas. And Adamba, free from hypocrisy. This is due to astikyam, or complete faith in the Vedic way of life, in confidence that one will be rewarded or punished in the next life for one's present activities. The fervent desire of the Vaishyas to accumulate wealth is not the same as ordinary material greed, because it is purified and tempered by the superior qualities mentioned in this verse. So they have, although the Vaishyas in the Varnashram system are similar to the people we see nowadays, they're better because they serve the Brahmins, they engage in charity, and it's tempered, and they believe in the Vedic way of life. And they also know about reward and punishment. In India, in the early days when we were preaching and making life members, and these people, they understood, yes, this is really good, because if I give you in charity now, I will get 10 times more back. I mean, they're thinking like this, actually, in India. They told me, another person, and I asked a donation to print my books. He said, yes, I know, I will get it back much more. This I will get back with interest. So they think like that, okay, I will give to the devotees, and I will get back a lot more than I give. And they actually have that mentality. So verse 19 is about Shudras, service without duplicity to the brahmanas, cows, demigods, and other worshipable personalities, and complete satisfaction with whatever income is obtained in such service are the natural qualities of Shudras. So Shudras also are satisfied. Brahmanas have to be satisfied. Shudras have to be satisfied. Vaishnavas are not satisfied. Vaishnavas always want more. Shudras are satisfied with whatever they get. And also the Brahmanas are satisfied with whatever they get. But the Vaishyas, no, they want more. Purport. When the entire social order is functioning properly according to Vedic standards, everyone is happy and satisfied. Although the Shudras are to be satisfied with whatever income they obtain to their service, they never lack the necessities of life because the other orders of society, like Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, are required to be abundantly generous, and the Brahmanas are well known for being the most merciful of all. Therefore, if all social classes obey the Vedic injunction, there will be a new and blissful life for the entire human society under the guidance of Krishna consciousness. So, in Krishna book, if you read Krishna book, then you would hear about these huge sacrifices like Rajasuya, or if they have these dancers, or in the assembly house, then after the sacrifice, then the king and queen would give away all their valuable dresses and clothes to the Shudras, who were dancing and singing. They would get the clothes of the kings and the queens, and they would get to wear that. So how satisfied they would be if you get to wear the clothes from the Kshatriyas, which are the best clothes. They have only the best. Then they would give away the gold plates to the Brahmanas. You know, eat once and throw it away, but they wouldn't throw it. They would give it to the Brahmanas. But the Brahmanas couldn't carry it all, so they would just leave it. You know, take a few pieces and go. So it was like that, and nothing was ever stolen. You could leave something, and nobody would take it. In the old times, even in a couple hundred years ago, people would not steal anything. They would sleep with their doors open. So now, verse 20 talks about those who are not in the Varnashram system. So let's see if we know anybody like this. Dirtiness, dishonesty, thievery, faithlessness, useless quarrel, lust, anger, and hankering constitute the nature of those in the lowest position outside the Varnashram system. Purport. Here the Lord describes those who reside outside the scientific social system called Varnashram. In Europe and America, we have practically observed that the standards of cleanliness are abominable even among so-called educated persons. Going without bathing and the use of indecent language are common. In the modern age, people whimsically speak whatever they like, dispensing with all authority, and there is therefore very little truthfulness or true wisdom. Similarly, in both capitalistic and communistic countries, everyone is busily engaged in stealing and robbing from everyone else in the name of business, taxation, or outright crime. People are not confident of the kingdom of God, nor of their own eternal nature. Thus, their faith is very weak. Moreover, since modern human beings are not very interested in Krishna consciousness, they constantly quarrel, bicker, and fight over completely insignificant issues related to the material body. Thus, at the slightest provocation, there are huge wars and massacres. A few weeks ago in Moscow, these people, who are they, with the bald heads, the like Nazi, like Nazi kind of people, I don't know, fascist. They were just going around and killing everyone who had black hair.
Where?
In Moscow.
2 weeks before?
Yeah, one of my friend's family, brother, he got stabbed with a knife and went in the hospital.
Skinhead.
So he's Armenian, so they didn't like anybody who had black hair because they're foreigners. So this, unbelievable.
So killing them?
Yeah, they're killing everybody. They're just going on the street, waiting for them to come off the train, and killing them.
Many students in the colleges, foreign students.
Yeah.
So
they were just, yeah. So this was a problem there. So this is Kali. This is the age of Kali, just for no reason. Yeah, these things are happening. Yeah, my friend, her brother, got stabbed. But luckily he was saved. I mean, he didn't die. They got him underneath the heart, not in the heart. So he was okay. I mean, sort of okay. As okay as you can be. But anyway, these things are going on. You don't know. You know, you can't be safe. Lust, anger, and hankering have become practically unlimited in Kali Yuga. The symptoms and characteristics mentioned here can be abundantly observed throughout the world, wherever people have fallen away from the Varnashram system. Because of sinful habits, such as animal killing, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, the great majority of human beings have become chandalas, or untouchables. Okay, so verse 20. This is Vishnu Chakravarti. This verse describes the qualities of those who live outside the Varnashram system. Such persons are referred to as Antyaja. Antyaja. Now, back to the Varnashram. Verse 21. This is for everyone, these qualities. Non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, desire for the happiness and welfare of all others, and freedom from lust, anger, and greed constitute duties for all members of society. Okay, don't look at your book. Tell me one quality that all members must follow. Yes? Nonviolence. Ananda?
Welfare.
Thinking of the welfare of others.
Truthfulness.
Yes?
Not stealing.
Okay. Yeah, honesty. Freedom from lust, anger, and greed. Oh, yeah, is that what you wanted to say?
Torture.
Huh?
Cleanliness.
Cleanliness is not there, no.
Honesty.
Honesty, yes.
Desire
for happiness and welfare of all others. That's it. Purport. The word sarvavarnik indicates the above-mentioned principles constitute general piety, which should be observed by all members of society, even those outside the Varnashram system. We practically find that even in societies that have fallen away from the Varnashram system, the above-mentioned principles are honored and encouraged. Such principles do not constitute a specific path of liberation, but are perennial virtues in human society. Okay, now 22, we're going to start hearing about the brahmanas and the brahmacharis. The twice-born member of society, well, this is actually for the three higher ones, achieve second birth through the sequence of purificatory ceremonies culminating in Gayatri initiation. Being summoned by the spiritual master, he should reside within the guru's ashram and with a self-controlled mind carefully study the Vedic literature. So this is the brahmachari. Purport, the term dwija or twice-born here indicates the three superior classes, brahmana, kshatriyas, and vaishyas, who all receive Gayatri mantra, which signifies their second birth through spiritual initiation. One's first birth is biological or seminal and does not necessarily indicate one is intelligent or enlightened. A young Brahmana boy, if qualified, may be initiated with Gayatri Mantra at the age of 12. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas a few years later. In order to become enlightened with spiritual knowledge, the boy resides within the Guru Kul or Ashram, the spiritual master. So there he talks about we have a Gurukul. So we'll go to the end. Generally, Shudras and those who do not follow the Vedic system are not attracted to such purificatory ceremonies. Therefore, they remain ignorant of spiritual life and envious of the bona fide spiritual master. So there's sangskaras that you have to do. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in the second class on Grihasthas. Those whose character has been civilized by a systematic cleansing process give up the tendency to be argumentative and whimsical and instead become submissive and eager to learn in the presence of a bona fide spiritual master. So the Western society, it trains you to argue. It trains you to be argumentative in many ways and to doubt. But actually, how can you learn if you doubt everything? So when a person goes to the spiritual master, then he surrenders, as Arjuna did with Krishna. And from the BTG, I got something about the spiritual master. And, of course, this verse is quoted. But it's talking about a spiritual master is not an enjoyer of facilities offered by a disciple. But on the contrary, he's a constant servitor, as the parents are to their children. Because in the old days, the children went at a very young age, 5 years old, and then the guru and his wife, they would take care of the children, just like the parents would take care of their child. And we saw that with Krishna and who went to the Gurukul, and because the wife of the guru wanted some firewood for cooking, and so he was serving her as well. He went out to get the wood, but then they got lost in the forest. But then they would take care of them, just like their own children. So verse 23, the brahmachari should regularly dress with a belt of straw and deerskin garments. Okay, well, belt of straw, I think they do that in Mayapur, but not deerskin. They do some of the things. He should wear matted hair. Well, we don't have to do that. Carry a rod and water pot and be decorated with aksha beads and a sacred thread. I heard that in the Gurukul they tried to do this with the kids. And they gave them a stick and they all started beating each other with their sticks. So they had to take away their sticks. It didn't work. Yeah, I could see they'd be really happy to have sticks. Carrying pure kusha grass in his hand, he should never accept a luxurious or sensuous sitting place. He should not unnecessarily polish his teeth, nor should he bleach and iron his clothes.
Iron?
Iron. Iron your clothes. That's brahmachari. Iron, you know, ironing.
Yeah.
The word adhauta dadvasa indicates a renounced brahmachari is not concerned with a glistening smile to attract the opposite sex, nor does he pay much attention to his outer garments. Brahmachari life is meant for austerity and obedience to the spiritual master, so that later in life, when one becomes a businessman, politician, or intellectual brahmana, one will be able to call upon resources of character, discipline, self-control, austerity, and humility. Yes. There was one of our Gurukul kids from Vrindavan, and he went to America, and he wanted to enroll in, he wanted to become like a policeman, like a state trooper. It's like a policeman in America. And they said, well, what kind of school did you go to? You know, he said, yes, but I learned a lot. My character improved. I learned honesty, discipline. They accepted him. Self-control, they said, yes, you can come to our school. He said that to them, and he was accepted. Now he's a state trooper, policeman on the roads of America. And so, yeah. So this is the brahmachari life is preparation. For that. Student life is described here as far different from the mindless hedonism known as modern education. Of course, in the modern age, Krishna-conscious brahmacharis cannot artificially adopt the ancient dress and ritualistic duties described here, but the essential values of self-control, purity, and obedience to a bona fide spiritual master are just as necessary today as they were in the Vedic times. So this was also the point of Satyaraj. We read these descriptions, and we should not be bewildered by the details, but we need to adopt the principles and adapt them to our modern way of life. So, and he says something about spiritual knowledge loses its life if it's not adjusted according to the needs of the people in the real world. If it remains an abstraction or a mere principle, it is virtually useless. Only when practically applied according to time, place, and circumstance does it have meaning. Same is true regarding the principles of Varnashram. Such principles must be adapted according to the wisdom of contemporary spiritualists and the guru who knows his disciple's psychophysical makeup. Otherwise, Varnashram is relegated to archaic theory without purpose or effectiveness. You know, archaic means outdated. They will say, oh, this is outdated. It's not for our modern world. So therefore, we have to know how to apply the principles of Varnashram and not see the external form, but we have to see the substance, the purpose of the Varnashram, to please Krishna. So verse 24, a brahmachari should always remain silent while bathing, eating, attending sacrificial performances, chanting japa or passing stool, and urine. He should not cut his nails and hair, including the armpit and pubic hair. Verse 25, one observing the vow of celibate brahmachari life should never pass semen. If the semen by chance spills out by itself, the brahmachari should immediately take bath in water, control his breath by pranayama and chant Gayatri Mantra. 26. Purified and fixed in consciousness, the brahmachari should worship the fire god, sun, acharya, cows, brahmanas, guru, elderly respectable persons, and demigods. He should perform such worship at sunrise and sunset without speaking, but by silently chanting or murmuring the appropriate mantras. So in the old days, there wasn't a lot of prajalpa in the ashram. They had to be very silent. And sometimes their guru wouldn't talk to them for a long time, days. I heard somebody tell me his guru didn't tell him anything for 11 years. Somebody in India. So it's like quite different nowadays where we're on the chat, on email, and so many things nowadays. Anyway, it's quite different from, you know, they were so satisfied. They didn't, you know. I think I went to a class with this Fakir Mohan, and he told a very interesting thing. I can't remember his guru's name. Anybody know his guru's name? I don't know.
Okay, one of them.
His guru. So his guru never gave him his name officially at initiation. And he saw his name on the list, but he never changed his name because his guru never told him. He kept that name his whole life. He never took his initiation name. So that was how he felt. He said, well, if my guru didn't tell me, how can I accept the name? So I thought that was quite interesting on, you know, how disciples used to see their gurus. He just said, no, he didn't tell me. So I didn't get the order to change my name. So that's quite... Now, we would be, you know, bugging the secretary of the guru and everything. Of course, we need our names. We don't want to have our Western names. But still, this is like an example of, you know, disciple relationship with the guru in ancient times. Nowadays, of course, nobody would do that. So verse 27 describes acceptance of a guru. Acharyam mam vijaniyam navamanye tkarvichi amartya bhutya suryeta sarvadeva mayo guru. One should know the acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods. One time, somebody came up to me and said, you know, because you're a woman, then the demigods are not in your body. I said, well, I have Prabhupada in my heart, so I've got all the demigods. So I said... Anyway, I don't know where they got that, but... So, yes, if we have Prabhupada in our heart, then we have everything. We have all the demigods. So let's see, we will go to paragraph 4. This is actually, this whole purport is taken from Chaitanya Charitamrita Prabhupada's purport on this verse. So I'll read from paragraph 4. Only out of his immense compassion does the personality of Godhead reveal himself as a spiritual master. Therefore, in the dealings of an acharya, there are no activities but those of transcendental loving service to the Lord. He is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead. It is worthwhile to take shelter of such a steady devotee who is called Ashraya Vigraha, or the manifestation or form of the Lord of whom one must take shelter. If one poses himself as an acharya but does not have an attitude of servitorship to the Lord, he must be considered an offender, and this offensive attitude disqualifies him from being an acharya. The bona fide spiritual master always engages in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By this test, he is known to be a direct manifestation of the Lord and a genuine representative of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Such a spiritual master is known as Acharya Dev. Influenced by an envious temperament and dissatisfied because of an attitude of sense gratification, mundaners criticize a real acharya. In fact, however, a bona fide acharya is none different from the personality of Godhead, and therefore to envy such an acharya is to envy the personality of Godhead himself. This will produce an effect subversive to transcendental realization. As mentioned previously, a disciple should always respect the spiritual master as a manifestation of Sri Krishna. But at the same time, one should always remember a spiritual master is never authorized to imitate the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. False spiritual masters pose themselves as identical with Sri Krishna in every respect to exploit the sentiments of their disciples. But such impersonalists can only mislead their disciples, for their ultimate aim is to become one with the Lord. This is against the principles of the devotional cult. The real Vedic philosophy is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, which establishes everything to be simultaneously one with and different from the personality of Godhead. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami confirms this is the real position of a bona fide spiritual master and says one should always think of the spiritual master in terms of his intimate relationship with Mukunda, Sri Krishna. Shrita Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, has clearly defined a pure devotee's observation of the spiritual master and Lord Shiva as one with the personality of Godhead exists in terms of their being very dear to the Lord, not identical with him in all respects. Following in the footsteps of Sri Raghunath Das Goswami and Shrita Jiva Goswami, later acharyas like Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur have confirmed the same truths. In his prayers to the spiritual master, Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur confirms that all the revealed scriptures accept the spiritual master to be identical with this personality of Godhead because he is a very dear and confidential servant of the Lord. Gaudiya Vaishnavas therefore worship Srila Gurudev, spiritual master, in the light of his being servitor of the personality of Godhead. In all the ancient literatures of devotional service and the more recent songs of Srinartam Das Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and other unalloyed Vaishnavas, the spiritual master is always considered to be either one of the confidential associates of Srimati Radharani or a manifested representation of Srila Nityananda Prabhu. Okay, I thought that last sentence was interesting. This is Srila Prabhupada speaking. It's Prabhupada's purport. So this verse is quoted in many places. And Prabhupada, in one purport, 6.7.16, he said that familiarity sometimes breeds contempt, but one should be very careful in one's dealings with the acharya. 6.7.16. And this verse is quoted. Well, there's another verse. It's 7.15.26. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. So if you think your guru is not spiritual, maintain a material conception of him, then everything will be frustrated. It'll be an impediment in your path of devotional service and advancement. Another, in 10.1.56 purport, Prabhupada explains Sarva Deva Mayo Guru. By the grace of the Guru, spiritual master, one can understand the different kinds of devas, demigods. So that's another thing. Okay. We will go, there's one more quote, two more quotes. Oh, yes. A lecture on Bhagavatam 126 in London, 1973. He quotes this verse, and he says, "Do not neglect the Acharya, Namartya Buddha. Don't consider him an ordinary human being. Asuyeta. If he sometimes chastises you, don't be envious. Oh, he's also a man. I'm also a man. Why is he talking like that?" He says, no, this is pranipat, surrender to the spiritual master. So then in another lecture in Vrindavan, he said, if someone foolishly thinks they are worshipping a man, he's like me and he has taken the seat and he's taking worship from disciples. So they question, sometimes they question like that, but they do not know how Acharya should be respected. Sometimes the reporters in America would say, why are you riding in a Rolls-Royce car? Prabhupada once answered, I should have a gold car made of solid gold, but because this is all they have, then so I'm accepting it. So because I'm representing the Lord, I'm representing God, so you should, if God comes, you should give a golden car. So then another time at the airport, he was, reporter asked him, you know, why are they all, everybody hit the ground, you know, as soon as he came in. Why are they all offering you such respect? Prabhupada says, the spiritual master should be worshipped as God. And then he said, but if he thinks he's God, then he's dog. So Prabhupada, yeah, he would have different answers at different times. So we will read a commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati on this verse, important verse, which I think you might have to know. Vishnu Chakravarti says, the Supreme Lord said, you should know the spiritual master is my most dear servant. Unquote. For this reason, it has been stated, Guru Varam Mukunda Preshtatvena. Smart 8. Remember the spiritual master as the most beloved devotee of Lord Mukunda. One should never disregard the spiritual master by considering him to be an ordinary human being. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, when the Supreme Lord takes the position of an instructor, desiring to award eternal benefit to the living entities, he becomes known as an acharya. If one neglects the acharya, or if a disciple considers him as equal to his spiritual master, and thus displays envy and audacity towards him, then there is no possibility for him to become successful in his vows. This is due to a lack of faith in spiritual master. Therefore, one who seriously aspires to attain the ultimate goal of life should properly worship his spiritual master, considering him as the supreme personality of servitor, Godhead. Instead of considering the Acharya as the object of one's service, one should consider him a staunch servant of Lord Vishnu. So always see your guru in relationship to Krishna. Verse 28. Duties of the Brahmachari. In the morning and evening, one should collect foodstuffs and other articles, deliver them to the spiritual master. Then, being self-controlled, one should accept for oneself that which is allotted by Acharya. So this means you collect rice, food, different things they used to collect, give it everything to your guru, and then if he forgets to call you to eat, you don't eat. It's not like you keep a little on the side in case, just in case. He forgets. Yeah. So, in the purport, one who desires to receive the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master should not be eager to accumulate paraphernalia of sense gratification. Rather, whatever one is able to collect, one should offer at the lotus feet of the Acharya. Being self-controlled, one should humbly accept that which is allotted by the bona fide spiritual master. Every living entity must subtly be trained to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But until one has become expert in the techniques of spiritual service, one should offer everything to the spiritual master who is completely realized in the process of worshipping the Lord. When the spiritual master sees the disciple is advanced in Krishna consciousness, he then engages the disciple in directly worshipping the personality of Godhead. So actually, in the when there was this huge book distribution in America, the devotees would go out and they wouldn't take any money for themselves. They would just get everything in at night. And then whatever the temple president would give them, then they would take.
And I know one time when the devotee was telling me she didn't have shoes and she had to somehow go out. But anyway, she waited for the temple president to give her shoes until she got... It was like very surrendered in those days. Very, very surrendered. I was in India, so I didn't experience it, but... Oh, yeah, actually. My temple president wouldn't give me shoes. Someone stole my shoes in Calcutta temple, and he said, "You don't need shoes. You're the pujari. You just stay in the temple and don't go out." So, I remember, "You don't need shoes. Stay in the temple." Right. I didn't need shoes, actually. Until he decided I would be a good collector, and then he bought me shoes and set me out. But I told him, "Okay, if you want me to go out, I have to have a box of sweets every day." Then he bought me. I go out collecting. Okay, verse 29. While engaged in serving the spiritual master, one should remain as a humble servant. Thus, when the guru is walking, the servant should humbly walk behind. Sometimes the devotee, Prabhupada, would stop abruptly and devotees would be so close, they would just almost bump into him. Yeah. So that's when the guru is walking. When the guru lies down to sleep, the servant should also lie down nearby. So Shuktakirti was like that. Sometimes he was sleeping underneath Prabhupada's bed to serve him in India, because the mosquito net was coming on Prabhupada and it would go down to the floor. So he would just go under the bed, under the mosquito, Prabhupada's mosquito net. So if Prabhupada ever needed anything, then he would be there for him. One time Prabhupada was sick and he got up to go to the bathroom and he actually fell, and Shukirti heard him. He woke up and he said, "Prabhupada, why didn't you call me?" He said, no, you were sleeping. He said, but that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you. And so, and Prabhupada was he didn't like to disturb devotees when they were sleeping. So here's an example. Shukirti was under the bed. When the guru has awakened, the servant should sit near him, massaging his lotus feet and rendering other similar services. So not many devotees got to do that with Srila Prabhupada. It was Shudakirti and Upendra and Harisari. Few devotees actually got that service of just always being on call. Like Shudakirti said, the first time he was on call, he was sitting in... He was instructed, "Now when Prabhupada rings his bell, you should go." And so Prabhupada rang his bell, and he ran in, offered his obeisances, and Prabhupada said, "I just wanted to see how fast you were." So, yes. Anyway, there's so many things going on with the guru and disciple like that. When the guru is sitting down in his asana, the servant should stand nearby with folded hands, awaiting the guru's order. In this way, one should always worship the spiritual master. So another one, there is one devotee who's, I don't know if he's with us anymore, but he was fanning Prabhupada out in the courtyard where Prabhupada used to sit under the tamal tree. And they were having a very ecstatic kirtan and he was jumping up and down. But then the fan caught it in the tree when he was jumping. So sometimes devotees, but in Nectar Devotion it says you should control your ecstatic symptoms when you serve the spiritual, when you're doing service. So, yeah, devotees would do different things. And then another time, Shudakirti was doing the chamara on Prabhupada, but the flies were just going, he was being very fancy, like an arti, but the flies were just sitting on Prabhupada, and Prabhupada got really upset, and he said, "Bring somebody intelligent up here." And then that was the end, and he started fiddling with the tape recorder to show that he was useful, And then they got this really crazy brahmachari. I think this was at Radha Damodar. I remember also. But he was really a crazy, crazy brahmachari. But he was doing a good job of the chamara with Prabhupada. He was almost hitting Prabhupada with the chamara. But the flies weren't coming on Prabhupada. It was at Radha Damodar temple in the courtyard. So let's see. Shibhakti Siddhanta on 29 was... The only means for advancing in spiritual life is to always remain faithfully devoted to the spiritual master. In all respects, one's relationship with the spiritual master should be that of a master and servant. In this regard, one should contemplate this verse from the Padma Purana, Uttarakhanda. Architva tu govindam tadiyanarchayetuya Nasabhagvato Gaya Kevalam Dambika Smita. One who performs worship of Lord Govinda but fails to worship his devotee should be understood to be not a devotee of the Lord, but simply a victim of false pride. Now, last verse for this class, verse 30. Until the student has completed his Vedic education, he should remain engaged in the ashram of the spiritual master, should remain completely free of material sense gratification, and should not break his vow of celibacy, brahmacharya. Purport. This verse describes upakarvana, brahmachari, who enters gihastha ashram, or family life, after completing his Vedic education. Because the other one doesn't go home. He just stays. So this one is going home. Until he is finished, it means he has a certain time limit, and then he goes home. The word evamvrita indicates, although one may eventually marry and become prominent in society as an intellectual, politician, or businessman, during student life, one must remain without false prestige as a humble servant, the bona fide spiritual master. The Naishtika Brahmachari who never marries is described in the following verse. So in the next class, we'll have a story about how the Varanashram used to be followed in India and how somebody became a Naishtika Brahmachari and left home at the age of 14. So before that, if you have any questions on these verses, you can ask at this point. No, there was only one class.
Hamsa.
Yeah, only one class. There was not Varanashram. It was no division.
Oh,
okay. First Satyuga and the day of Brahma, everybody was Hamsas. Then what happened after that?
But
there were classes. Yeah. There were classes of society, but they were all Paramahansas. Shudras were Paramahans. Everybody was Paramahansa.
So
then there were classes. But they were all Paramahansas. No matter what class you belong, you might do different work, but everybody was a pure devotee, unalloyed devotee of the Lord.
What was the reference for that?
And that reference is 9th canto, 9:14:47, a comment by Jiva Goswami in the purport of 9th canto, that the Hamsas were only for the first Satyuga and the day of Brahma. That makes more sense. It makes sense. You don't need to do it. The fruit, you just go to the, you just had to pick the fruits off the tree and
not washing the clothes, not cleaning the house.
Yourself. Yeah. Brahmanas cook themselves.
Brahmanas wash their clothes for sure.
Yeah, Brahmanas do their, they do everything themselves. They're not dependent on anyone.
I know the Srila Prabhupada in America,
he did everything.
He was washing his clothes and cleaning washing the pots himself.
Yeah. Yes.
Ashramas.
Ashramas. Yes.
But Varnas not.
Varnas? I can't say yes or no. Oh, so they didn't exist. Yeah, right. They didn't exist. It says here one class. There was only one class. Hamsa. Yeah. Krita Yuga. Treta Yuga. Yes. In Treta Yuga, the Varnas came.
So the divisions.
Yeah, you don't need. You, yeah.
Manifested.
Because the Brahmanas are self-sufficient. They depend on the Lord. Just like, go to the second canto where it says, if you have your arms to rest on, what is the need of a bed? Mm-hmm. If you have the water from the rivers, what is the need of, you know? Yeah.
So, were they married people in Satyayuga?
Yeah, there were, as far as I understand, there were married people in Satyayuga. Yeah, the Manus, the... There were sages, there were Manus.
There were no grihastas.
They are grihastas, yeah. The sages were married. And the kshatriyas were married, the kshatriyas of the universe, the Manus. So, obviously, there would be descendants of them. There was grihastas. There were for the universe, it was there. But, for this earth, and I was talking about the earth planet. Interesting question. Yes? If there weren't any grihastas, if there weren't any grihastas, then, where would there be any, where would the people come from? Prabhupada said, fall from the sky? When there is fighting between the sannyasis and grihastas, he says, now where are your sannyasis going to come from? Are they going to fall from the sky? They must come from the grihastas. There must be grihastas. Yeah, right. Yeah. She said there was an assumption in your question that only the brahmacharis were engaged in suffering, only the single people were engaged in self-realization and not the grihasthas. But they were also paramahansas, grihasthas. Very good. Yes. Okay. Thank you for your comment. No, we will have any more questions. Yes.
Is there some limit for brahmacharya ashram? Sometimes I've heard it.
Oh, it used to be. There used to be a limit.
From after
25, age of 20.
The is 40, 50, 60. So still use brahmacharya ashram or some other?
Nice tikka brahmacharya. Yeah?
In Madhva Samhita, it says that the brahmachari studies as much as he needs to learn what he has to learn. Mm-hmm. It can be 4 years, 8 years, 16 years, 32 years, or 40 something.
Wow.
Since he started.
Probably 48. Madhva Samhita. There you go. Yeah, generally it was 25, up to the age of 25. That was like a general age limit that you student life is 25, yeah, 5 to 25, and then you get married, and then that's another 25 years, and then you take vanaprast at the age of 50 and 75 sannyas. But now it's, you know, it's different. So okay, of course you learn as much as you need to learn according to that's a good principle, Manasamhita. Learn as much as you need to learn, and when you are satisfied, then you can ask your guru what you should do. Yeah. You ask your guru, you know, if you want to change ashram. It's up to the guru. It's the guru's. He will know if he will say yes or no. He will know your nature and he'll say yes, it's good, or no, it's your nature is, you will not be good in grihastha life, better you stay. So the guru will tell you, well, yes, okay, if you think that's good, then good. Otherwise, better you stay single. Any question? You had a question? Yeah, that was in the Treta and Dwapara Yuga. For Kali Yuga, you have to follow. We are actually following the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, where the brahmacharis shave, even the grihasthas shave their heads. And one time, Prabhupada was talking with devotees, and he was talking about Lord Chaitanya, and he had a Bengali accent, so he was saying, Lord Chaitanya has come to shave you. Because all their S's, they say, sha. And then devotee said, shave? Oh, save and shave. Yeah, so we do follow that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And actually, it was a Babaji line until Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who again established the Varnashram, that we follow the Varnashram actually, that you do shave. This is, so therefore, this is a principle you don't follow. If you're living in the jungle, in the Guru's ashram, it might not be easy to shave your head, you know, but here we are, we're not in the jungle, you're not in the jungle at the Guruku. Previously, it used to be jungle. You live in the forest, you get wood. And, you know, you don't bother about cutting your hair much. But now it's different, and we are following Srila Prabhupada, and he has told everybody to shave up, and that's a symptom of surrender of the brahmachari sannyasi. Pancha, okay, yes. In Kali Yuga, we have to follow Pancha Tiki Vidhi. That's the application. We can't follow the Vedas, actually. The Vedas are not for shudras. Yes? Only... What to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's okay. The purport said it's okay if they have these other qualities. That they give in charity. It's all right if they use their money for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, which is the purpose of Varnashram. Yes?
So if there is a devotee businessman who is satisfied, should we preach to him that no, you should strike? There are some.
If there's a devotee businessman who is satisfied, should we preach to him? No, you should get more money for Krishna. No, because he's a Vaishnava, so he's gone beyond the qualities of the Vaishya. If he has the transcendental qualities, there's no need to make him fit into the Varnashram society by being a Vaishya according to Varnashram. It's better if he's just a Vaishnava. And someone who has transcendent, then for someone who has transcendent, then he has superior qualities, that he is satisfied. Yes? Bye-bye.
From my experience, it seems that anybody who's practicing devotion service and they're a businessman, they gradually lose the taste for it anyway.
Yeah. More and more it happens. You see that I talked to one who has he's in Bombay, and his child was born without being able to see or speak or move, only hear. The only sense that child has is hearing. The child cannot do anything else, cannot see. He's a very well-to-do person, but because of this child, and the child is always going into an intensive care all the time, he has to lead a very simple life, like only a very small little apartment. And he said before, it used to bother him a lot that, you know, he would make so much money and all of it would just be lost. But then once he became a devotee, he said, now I'm very happy and I'm satisfied. And this child is, I can see how this child is very spiritually advanced. The kid, all he does is listen to lectures all day in kirtans. And he knows the different, you know, he likes Radhanaswami a lot and Bhakti Charu's kirtan, bhajans. So the child actually brought them to Krishna consciousness, because when he was, I think I told this story before, when he was a baby, then he would cry all the time, and unless, when they started playing Hare Krishna for him, then he stopped crying. If they tried the, you know, Bollywood music, and he would just cry. And then they had to bring the CDs from the temple, and then he would stop crying, and so then by that they became devotees. And then he became set. He said, yes, okay, now I accept, you know, even though he has a very high-paying job, but he doesn't get to keep that money, really. But he also does now service for the temple, and he does. So, and he's satisfied now. He's satisfied with what he has. Whereas he sees all his friends have got very big houses and everything. He can't have that. But now as a devotee, he's okay with it now. Yeah, anybody? Yeah. No lectures, please. Okay, anyway. Anybody else? Yes.
So now it's Kali Yuga, all with is mixed, so there is some real Kshatriya, real Brahmana, real Vaishya, real...
It's all mixed. Everyone, there's a mixture.
A teacher who studies to teach in the university, is there a Brahmana?
No, not usually.
So is there some Brahmana?
Yeah.
In the military, is there a real Kshatriya or...
Yeah. I mean, you might find one, especially in Nepal, the Gurkhas. The Gurkhas are real Kshatriyas. I mean, they're real soldiers. They're not afraid to fight. And they're, yeah, I mean, that's what I told this story many times about. So I'll just tell it. It's a short story about the Iraqi war in 1994. And these Nepali soldiers, Gurkhas, were fighting for the British. And the British knew, because they used to be in India and Nepal, so they knew about their courage. And so they got a group of the soldiers and they said, now we need volunteers. We're going to drop you from the airplane into the Iraqi territory. You know that story, right? And only half of them raised their hands. And then he was surprised, you know. So he asked the other half, well, why didn't you raise your hand? And they said, well, we don't think we will survive the fall. 50% were ready to jump from the plane into Iraq without a parachute. He said, no, we'll give you parachutes. And then all of them raised their hands. So that's, you know, that's, they are the real Kshatriyas. Yeah. Well, that's how they knew, the British knew, these Gurkhas.
Yeah,
how to recognize, that's
people,
hard.
We have some description of quality, and we go to the world and we try to compare it to quality.
Yeah.
A little confused, so it's teaching, have knowledge.
Yeah, so we have to look at here and see the qualities, and then you can understand. The qualities are given here in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. So if you see people with these qualities and who are in that position, then you can understand, okay, here is a real Kshatriya. He has heroism. He's a leader. He's, you know, he's so many things, very strong. He's a Kshatriya. The Brahmana, he has these qualities. He's peaceful. He's satisfied. And and he tends to like reading books, and he's intellectual. He likes more to discuss things than to act so much. He likes to discuss and more on the intellectual level. You can see that there's a natural division in society like that. But unfortunately, they don't have the brahminical qualities, those who are in the brahminical position as teachers. They wonder why the students are giving so much trouble. Mm-hmm. Because they themselves don't have these brahminical... They are not to be respected also for their behavior. How to know? Then you have to... if you're thinking about yourself, you have to ask your guru. The guru is supposed to tell the disciple about his psychophysical nature. Who should know that much about the disciple. And otherwise, there's aptitude tests. There's so many things you can do. How can you know? And you have to read these descriptions and then see, okay, this person is peaceful, satisfied, depending on the Lord. Yeah, you just have to look. And okay, Vaishya. Now we find a lot of people, they want to make money. How much is he giving in charity? And you see. But there are some. Few. giving in charity. Protecting the cows, not slaughtering them. Also none of them. They're all killing their cows. So very few. Real Vaishyas, real very rare, actually. So Varnashram, very difficult. Now Shudras, there's a lot. Shudras, but even the Shudra qualities, I mean, that would be hard to find a Shudra like that. Shudra's very high level. He doesn't steal, he's honest.
All the brahmanas, it's satisfied.
Yes. Satisfied with what he gets. And they're having, labor disputes, and so it's not even a Shudra.
So our work is lower than Shudra level. Yeah,
yeah. You didn't know that? Yes, we are lower than we are. Our birth is lower, but qualities may be something else that you have to see. Obviously, you're higher than a Shudra because you became a devotee. Yes?
Mostly, and also in the world, although we may find it here and there, but in general in Kali Yuga, the higher classes, that's why, are not there. That's why there's so much chaos. So it's very difficult to find the Kshatriyas and Brahmanas.
Yeah.
Lower classes, you will find. The higher classes...
There might be some Vaishyas.
Sometimes, few Vaishyas, Shudras.
A lot of Shudras.
Prabhupada said that this movement is meant to put back a head on the society.
Yeah. Right.
That by chanting Hare Krishna, we are meant to develop that sattva guna, which is typical of the Brahmins and also is in the Kshatriyas, by which they can perceive the absolute knowledge.
And I would say that the qualities of the Shudras that we find here would be qualities in the Western society that they would say, this is a very high class person, this is a very, good person. This is a good person. There would be like the Shudra description here. He's a good person. In the West, you say, this person is good. He's honest. He's
like the lion's king, Prabhupada. The lion's king of the animals.
Yeah. So the Shudra qualities we find, that will be the highest in our... Yes, do you have something to say? Anand Vrindavan?
What's your talent?
What's your talent? That's a nice comment. That's right. The Shudras are very important. Yeah, I see like in our communities, like Alachua, where they have many, many devotees. And somebody who does the Shudra work, but it's not like they're a Shudra, there's proper disciples, some are carpenters, some are electricians, but you're not seeing them as Shudras. You're saying, this is another devotee. It's another devotee, yeah.
And this is also a characteristic of those who have given up the Varnashram, who don't belong to that, is that they... one of the greatest principles is respect.
Yes,
that
yes.
Everyone respects each
other,
knowing the truth.
Right,
and
right.
How everything fits together. And those who are out of Varnashram, they lose that way. Because out of Varnashram is they don't accept authority, so the principle of respect is
right.
Gone.
In fact, they had names of respect for each of the varnas. Remember?
Thakur.
Thakur was the Shudras. They would call, you would call the Shudras Thakur.
No, Chaudhari. Chaudhari.
Also Thakur. Prabhupada says Thakur in a lecture, yeah. You would call him, they would call him like that for the Shudras. And Sethji for the Vaishyas. Vaishyas Sethji and Maharaj for the Kshatriyas. Sethji, S-E-T-H, yeah. Maharaj for the Kshatriyas. And Brahmanas, I forget.
Panditji,
yeah. Panditji, those are the four that Prabhupada said in a lecture. Yeah. That's different. I don't know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not a Brahmana. He was born in a Vaishya or something.
Kayasta.
Like Kayasta family. Kayasta and Prabhupada also. You were born in Kayasta families. Yes. Thakur?
Deity.
That means deity. Yeah.
The Lord.
Because
we see everyone as
the Lord in everyone.
We see the Lord in everyone.
Yeah. Not everyone as the Lord, but the Lord in everyone. Yeah, okay, so we'll stop here. We'll come back at 1 o'clock and have our second class. And I have something to read from this book by Bhakti Vikas Swami, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. So there are places where the Varnashram is actually still, or it has been, I mean, till recent years, I don't know about now, since TV has come to the village. Maybe not, but previous few years ago, it used to still be there. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.